Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show, Hurricane Hotline. We're 2 weeks away from the big events. Miami and Florida, August 31st, 3:30 kickoff. We got a big show coming up here tonight. Kind of revolves around Miami and Florida and the beginning of the football season. Don Bailey Jr. joins us here momentarily. President Joe Echevarria also joins us here in the first segment. He sat down with Josh Darrow. We're going to talk about the new college football playoff with Eric Palms. That's coming up about 6:35. Bruce Feldman from The Athletic joins us at 7 o'clock, and we'll break down the University of Miami and the rest of college football. Bruce has a big article coming out tomorrow on in The Athletic on the University of Miami and his high, very high expectations of the Hurricanes. And then we'll wrap things up here a little bit later on in the show with Josh Darrow will be rejoining us, talking more about the University of Miami. And we will talk a little bit about recruiting. And Josh Pate will join us. Late kick Josh Pate will join us. And he'll break down what he sees at the University of Miami compared to the rest of college football. My broadcast partner is Don Bailey Jr. We'll be with you starting at 11 a.m. on Saturday, August the 31st. A little plug here. For the opening of our game. Hope everybody tunes in at 11 a.m. for our open. Vic and I kind of worked on it all summer long. We think we came up with something that's pretty cool to kick off the Hurricanes broadcast season. So on Saturday, August 31st, tune in at 11 a.m. I think you'll like the theme of what we got coming your way. Don Bailey Jr., good evening, Don. How are you?
I'm good, Joe. You got me busy tonight, don't you?
Yeah, we got all kinds of stuff here tonight.
Yeah, good. Good. Ready for it. I'm excited.
Going to build up to next Saturday, August 31st in Gainesville. Yeah. Start off at 11 a.m. I got some great production work in our pregame show, so it's going to be a lot of fun. We had a scrimmage on Saturday. What were your thoughts? We stood on the sideline Saturday for the scrimmage. What did you come away with?
Well, I think that this football team is positively bigger and in the best shape that they've been in
in recent history. I think that Coach Cristobal and his staff have done a phenomenal job of identifying the type of player that fits their culture and understands the expectation level once they arrive on campus, in the classroom, in the weight room, on the field, and everything that goes with it. And you're starting to see his culture and his vision starting to come together. And what does that mean? That means that you're going to have a tough football team that's well-conditioned. It's as big as humanly possible, and you're going to see as much competition at every position that you have, that you can have.
I've already figured out the Gators game, by the way. It's a pretty simple game. Don't turn it over.
Okay.
Hand the ball to Damian Martinez. Don't start a pep rally. Gators had 7 takeaways all of last year. So you know what they've been talking about all summer, right? Let's take the football away. So –
yeah.
And of course, that's been an Achilles heel for the University of Miami the last 2 years.
It has. And you cannot win football games, especially on the road, if you're giving it away. And it was a huge problem for Miami last year. You can really point to 3 games that if they would have not turned it over at the rate that they have, that there would have been a chance that they would have won it. So let's say you say 3 and then you settle on 2. You know, you have 7 wins versus 9 wins, and that's a big, big difference. And there's reasons for it. Some of it's personnel, I guess, and some of it's inexperience at other positions, but it just cannot happen. You just can't do that. Championship football teams do not turn the football over. It's that simple. And it's not going to change in the next probably for our lifetime, to be honest with you. It's not going to change.
Well, especially in that Gator game, because they haven't been able to take the ball away, so you can't give them any kind of hope or thought that that's going to be the trend of the game. Before we talk more about Miami and Florida and the University of Miami, very important, and it's going to come up here in a minute on our show, but the University of Miami has a new president, Joe Echevarria, that happened during the summer. Might be the only president in the history of any university that can stand on the sidelines in a suit in 95-degree weather and humidity at 182% and not sweat a drop. So,
good description. We have never seen him sweat. That's for sure. And
he's a cool cucumber who loves the University of Miami and the right person for this job at the right time.
Well, I agree with you, and you never go wrong with a family business. You know, if somebody's in the family, and he's in the family, graduated from the University of Miami and spent his entire college career at UM, and then went on and did phenomenal things, and then has come back to the University of Miami and has made a huge difference. And it's different. It's not a job. It's his family. You know, this is where he started, and there's a place in everybody's heart at their alma mater, and he is no different. I believe he'll do and has done. I mean, the success that we're having right now has a lot to do with his leadership as well, even before being named president.
Yeah, we kind of look at it as a athletic thing, but it's for the entire university. And he's going to do a great job with it. The university is going to thrive under his leadership. Speaking of family, our broadcast partner, Josh Darrow, our sideline reporter, who will be on the sidelines a week from Saturday in Gainesville when it's 185 degrees. He sat down with University of Miami President Joe Echevarria.
Well, we're in studio. You know it's big, the Behind the U podcast, and it does not get any bigger than this on this campus right now. The acting president of the university, Joe Echevarria. My friend, thank you. It is a pleasure seeing you.
Thanks for having me.
Born and raised in the Bronx, how did it become young Joe Echevarria looking at college, deciding that you are a UM grad, that you wanted to come south and come here, and this is where you wanted to spend your 4 years?
You don't have days and days for this answer, do you, Josh?
Well, I have plenty of time. You, I do not believe, have as much time.
Well, quickly, you know, I was an inner city kid from the South Bronx, Puerto Rican by background. And there was some terrific programs around what then was called affirmative action. It's not called it anymore, but it was at the time. And they were looking for minority children to go to college. And I was one of those fortunate individuals. The program did all the work. They gave you all the options. And they sort of steered you where the opportunities were. And I walked this beautiful campus sometime in the, I would say it must have been the early summer that year that I first came down here. So when I walked the campus, it was, again, it was been back in, I started in 74, so it probably was 73 at the time.
It's a good year, by the way.
Yeah, it was a fantastic year for me. Yeah. Changed my life. I picked this school because I had never seen anything that looked like paradise to me. And that's what I first thought of when I walked the campus of the University of Miami.
And that's when the hook was in you, because you are, this is a super significant and meaningful place to you, not only in your job, but like you love this place.
It has altered my course of my life. I came here when I was 50 years ago, as I've said before. It's just serendipity that the number happens to be 50, but it's exactly 50. I walked on the campus in August of 1974. And it changed my life trajectory. I was a 17-year-old kid at the time. That was 50 years ago.
My goodness. Now, you are very publicly present at University of Miami athletic events, as you were the CEO, Board of Trustees. Now you're the president. But did your love affair, because the athletic world back then was not the same here. So did that love affair start then as a student?
Well, the love affair with athletics.
Correct.
Starts by being an inner city kid from the Bronx. We played all the sports outside, the conventional sports at the time. Remember, I'm going back to the 60s.
We played some stickball?
Stickball we played. We played all the major sports. I keep saying the major sports. It's the four major sports at the time.
Right.
Which was baseball, hockey, basketball, and football. And it was actually mainly pro football at the time that we followed. But there wasn't much college football in New York, believe it or not, in the boroughs. College football in New York City, the famous team was, believe it or not, it pains me to say this, man, was Notre Dame. Because they had the exposure and the visibility at the day. I still remember running around saying Theismann for Heisman as a kid. So anyway, it started then. So when I came to the University of Miami, I was a sports kid, played baseball. So I love sports. I think somebody asked me, what are my hobbies? And I said, I love my kids and I love sports. And that's what I do. So it's always been in my blood.
Once you left here, that's almost that few years, Howard Schnellenberger is probably coming as you're going, I think, right around there.
No. Howard, maybe. You're right, because Howard came in the early 80s.
I think he came like 70, started in 79 on that trajectory.
Yeah.
So he's coming as you're going. So did you kind of reattach yourself as the pro, that first championship and then on with Jimmy? And did you sort of, was there ever a detachment, retachment, or you just were with the program the whole way?
There was never detachment. When I started my professional career, I became an accountant. I think, Josh, as you know, I worked in a firm here, a fabulous firm called, today it's called Deloitte. I went to all the sporting events. I went to baseball games. Believe it or not, we didn't have basketball at the university at
Correct.
The time. We had stopped it. So when I was in college, there was no basketball. But I'd gone to baseball games. I'd gone to football games. The firm had season tickets to UM games, and I would buy it through there. So I've been going to college football games since 1974 here. Even when I moved to New York for a decade or so, I still came back to football games here.
After college, you're working here in Miami?
Correct.
Then up to New York? At the corporate office, I guess, or something like that for Deloitte, which is like a national, international.
Yeah, it's a global firm.
Monstrous Fortune 500 company, yes?
Well, it's private, but yes, it would be a Fortune 500 if it was measured that way. But fundamentally, just I think of easy math when I do things, 50 years. So I spent 40 years in the firm called Deloitte, round numbers, not exact. 20 years was in Miami. The first 20, the second 20 were up north, back and forth, traveling in the middle in the region. So 20, 10, and 10. 20 local, 10 traveling. 10 in New York. In all that 40 years, two things I followed professionally and sports-wise was the University of Miami and the New York Yankees.
Those are your loves.
Those are the loves of my sports.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's life.
So do you remember where you were January 1st, 1984, Miami, Nebraska?
I was in the stadium.
Yes.
Okay. Where? In the stadium, praying that then unknown person, meaning I didn't know he was going to make the play, that Kenny Calhoun deflects that ball from Jeff Smith. And the irony of that day is we had tickets through my firm at the time, and we were in my mind on the opposite side of the stadium that we are in the current configuration.
Got it.
In the old Orange Bowl. And for me, what I remember is, and I'm Catholic, I remember when they were going for that two-pointer. First of all, I was shocked that they did it, but I guess that's what real people who are confident do at the time. To me, I just couldn't believe we were there. Remember, I had gone, my last time of going to the Swamp was for that season. I went to the first game that
year. We lost.
We lost 28-3.
Yeah.
It was Bernie's.
I think it was his first start, right?
First start, I believe. I went there, a bunch of us guys drove up and around. We went to the game, and it was the most miserable experience I had ever had. But they told me we'd win 10 straight and win the national championship. I would have taken it.
Every day.
But so I remember sitting there in the stadium and on that particular play. Remember, that game went back and forth. We got off to a fast start. They caught up. That was the Fumbleroski game. They catch up. We get ahead again. They catch up again. We weren't supposed to be there. Everything had to line up for us on that day. We were like number five in the country, I recall. And everybody ahead of us had to lose except for Nebraska. We controlled that. And if they tie, they probably win. I remember I prayed, just let us have this one win. I'll never ask you again. Well, that turned out to not be true.
I was about to say.
I did that at least 30, 40, 50 more times. Because I remember the games we didn't win more than the games we won. So that's where I was that day. I still remember the 58 games at the Orange Bowl. I remember the game I didn't go to was the Washington game. I had a wedding. We lost that game. Broke the streak in the Orange Bowl. I'll never forgive myself for that. So I remember all of it like it was yesterday. I could put baseball in there if you wanted. I could put the beginning of basketball with Coach Foster down at the Knight Center.
How much does that fuel your involvement and how you've been actively sort of have you shaped the football program the last few years, not only as a Board of Trustees member, but what you did to kind of shape where we are now, your desire to have those moments again?
Well, first of all, it is a privilege to be now serving the institution called the University of Miami. We do three things extraordinarily well at high levels. We can never forget what we're about. We're fundamentally about education, research, and taking care of our patients. The brand of the institution is carried by all those three, plus athletics. The university is going to be 100 years old next April. Athletics, football, baseball, they're fundamentally about 85 years that they've been in existence. They weren't there at the very beginning. And so the 50 years that I've been part of the university, they've been a significant part of the institution. So I hold all those dimensions at the same level. Academics really is important. What our faculty do is extraordinarily important. Our research is extraordinarily important. We're a member of the AAU, which is the Association of American Universities. We're the top 69 research institutions in the United States, a prestigious award we have. We take care of patients, and we do a lot of world-class patient care downtown. And athletics is part of our brand. So I'm passionate about all four dimensions equally. This conversation is about the athletic componentry of it. But if I was sitting somewhere else, if I was downtown at Sylvester or Bascom or at the UHealth Tower, I'd be talking about patients. So I shape athletics, my participation in it, the same thing. Excellence. Excellence in everything we do. Athletic excellence on the field is easy to figure out because there's a score being kept of some kind. And there's a whole bunch of people judging the performance. It's an incredible opportunity and an incredible challenge. So I feel for that. So my view of athletics is no different than my view of our academic core, no different than our research patients. We want to be excellent at the people we serve, whether they're our students, our researchers, our patients, or our fans. We want to be excellent. And my responsibility in that is to serve those populations and put us in the best position to be excellent. I don't teach classes, really, substantively. I don't do research. I'm not a researcher, and I'm not a doctor. I don't take care of patients. I also don't coach up players or form teams. I have to create opportunities for all four of those things to be incredibly successful. That's the way I think about my university. It is a powerful institution. I'm looking at the big U behind you. When I went to school, that wasn't a thing, the U. But it is now, and that came from a 20-year magical period in athletics. I remind people that the 5 football and the 4 baseball national championships we won happened in the same 20-year period of time.
Speaking of people, you selected a man, Mario Cristobal, to lead our football program. Why was he the guy? Like, you get involved in that, and he becomes the guy that's the right person. As you said, it's about the people.
Yeah, and I think that the group of individuals that were involved in that, I was just one of several. I think for all the reasons that he's understood the program, I think that's important. I do think everybody thinks their program is unique. Because when I talk to someone from OSU or from Texas or from USC, everybody believes their program's unique, and they're not wrong. It is unique. But understanding our uniqueness, I think, is important. Understanding the community that we're in, what we expect, I think that matters. It's a high bar of expectations. Some might say outsized, given our performance in the 100 years versus just the 20 years.
Right.
Because there is a gap there. And nevertheless, we just thought he was the right person at the right time, given who he was as a person and what he stood for in terms of excellence and character and the commitment. And we knew it wasn't going to be quick, at least I did. And I think we all believe this was going to take time. And we needed to get better year by year, ultimately to land at the place we all want to be, which is excellence.
You're well-versed in leadership. You've hired leaders. You are a leader. You're a leader of this institution. You're a leader of your corporate position. How much of that leadership was important in Mario, because he was going to be leading this program that meant so much to the school?
Yeah, again, I'll speak for me. There were many people involved.
Well, yeah, you're the only one I got.
I got to be clear. I'm speaking on behalf of myself.
Yes.
There were others who may say it differently, may feel differently, who were equally, if not more, involved, including our president, former president, Julio Frank. For me, you know, personally, leadership, you know, boils down to a couple of things. You got to be high integrity. You can't compromise integrity and values. You just can't. It sounds very cliche-ish, but it's actually true, because everybody watches you and what you do and how you do it. You have to be passionate about what you do.
Well, that box was checked pretty quick, right?
It's got to happen, right? You have to be passionate about what you do. One of the things that's often understated about leaders is leaders have a bias to action. They act. Sometimes there's a lot of analysis and talking and discussion, but it takes a bit of courage to act. So we wanted people who had a bias to action. We wanted people who could finish. Finishing is really hard in life. Everybody who gets a January 1st idea what they're going to do, right? Resolution. A lot of resolutions happen on January 1st. How many actually get acted on and finished? The professional world's no different. Starting is a lot easier than finishing. Finishing, it's done. I got there. I accomplished it. Not halfway, not some of the part. Finishing was important. He felt like a finisher to us. And you got to have the right attitude for people. Because like I said before, all we have is people. And people have to want to follow you or be led by you or be with you. And if you look back and nobody's following you, then you're not really leading anything, are you? So it was a lot of things. You can distill it down. Everybody's got leadership things that they look at. Those are some of the things I look at. And that's why I always get back to the people, Josh.
Acting president of the university, a good friend, Joe Echevarria, on the Behind the U podcast. Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for what you do, Josh.
All right, Josh Darrow with acting president Joe Echevarria, the Behind the U podcast. You can catch Josh's Behind the U podcast at hurricanesports.com. He is going to be a great president and lead the University of Miami to all the spots they need to go, both academically with the hospital and athletically as well. These are going to be all challenging times, especially athletically, and they have the right person that is going to navigate what is in front of the University of Miami. That is for sure. Okay, Don and I will continue, and also still to come, Eric Palms in this hour from the Orange Bowl. We'll talk about the Orange Bowl committee, and also college football playoff expands to 12 teams. We'll talk with Eric about that and how the bowl games are going to be inside the playoff and how cool that's going to be this year for college football. Let me talk to you for a moment about Miami's luxury dealership. Of course, I'm talking about Williamson Cadillac, founded over 50 years ago. And of course, at Williamson, they are more than a dealership. Ed Williamson and his lovely wife, Carol, they have been there for you year after year after year. They are our friends in this community. They are our neighbors in this community. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base because they stay focused on the customer experience. They're going to treat you like family. So if you want world-class customer service when you purchase a new Cadillac, visit Williamson Cadillac. And new vehicles are arriving daily, which means Williamson is going to have the new Cadillac you're looking for. May I suggest the XT4? That's what I'm driving. It is it's a drive pleaser. It is always ready to tackle any task, whether you're going grocery shopping or daily commuting, the XT4 is always going to meet a wide array of needs and desires. The XT4, it delivers. It delivers the wow factor. It's turbocharged, it's got great acceleration, fuel efficiency, top shelf. It will surpass all of your expectations. Visit Williamson Cadillac. You can go online at WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle. Experience a new Cadillac from your luxury dealership, Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, still to come, Eric Palms from the Orange Bowl Committee, the great CEO of the Orange Bowl Committee, will be joining us. Don Bailey Jr. with us now, Miami and Florida, on August 31st. We kick things off at 11 o'clock in the morning. I mentioned we're going to talk with Eric Palms in our next segment. And you talk about contributing to the community and doing a great job and really navigating tough waters through the years. I don't know if anybody's done it better than Eric.
You know, Joe, there's similar in a sense of a story to Joe Echevarria is that this is their town. You know, I mean, Joe, of course, was born in New York, but Eric, this is his town. I mean, this is Joe's university, and this is Eric's town, and they have a built-in care factor, and it's very important for them that everything that happens here is successful. And Eric has been a part of the Orange Bowl, my goodness, for years. I remember being on that committee with him at the Blockbuster Bowl, and it's just been a great period of time watching him navigate college football and making sure that the Orange Bowl is always relevant and they always do the right thing for the community and they always do anything they can, especially for not just the world of football, but for the youth of South Florida.
University of Miami would like to get in the Orange Bowl game this year because it's a semifinal game. And one way to get that far is Ruben Bain, Akeem Mezidor, Simeon Barrow, C.J. Clark, Tyler Barron, Elijah Alston, Ahmed Moten, Anthony Campbell, Josh Horton. That's the Miami defensive line. I left a few out on purpose because they're younger. But my point is this. This is a pretty deep group, deeper than we've seen in a long time. And when they're all out there, they look massive.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, one thing you can bet your life on is a Coach Cristobal coach team is going to have big bodies and great athletes and excellent football players along the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's a former offensive lineman, so he understands that side of it. And It also gave him a bird's eye view of what to face. So, I mean, they're just a line of scrimmage team. And it's something really, you know, you start reeling off the names on defense. It's been a long time since we've had the depth at Miami with that quality of talent that he's accumulated right now.
You know who gets better? Because when you have that kind of talent, your offensive line. You know, Jalen Rivers was on the show last week, and I know you watch those trench battles almost every single day, but if you are a Maui Noah or Jalen Rivers or a Carpenter, when you're in your one-on-one drills or group drills, there's no off segment.
You're 100% correct about that, and that's where that terminology that they use so much at Miami, you know, iron sharpens iron, comes into play. And, you know, you can list a million reasons why Miami is getting better, and all of them are a part of it. But one of the most impressive parts that Coach Cristobal's done is the upgrade of talent. And when you have to go, if you're Jalen Rivers and you're going against Bane every single day in practice, then guess what? You better get better or you're going to get beat. And that's the level of competition and where it comes into play. And I see it every single day, how both lines of scrimmage have improved.
The other thing is, back to the defensive line for a moment, when we go to Gainesville, one of the things Miami is going to have to deal with is going to be their home field advantage. They're going to have 90,000 people there. They play very well at home. It is more comforting to know that you go into that game with Barrow in his 34th game, C.J. Clark with 33 games under his belt, Barron with 49 games under his belt, Alston with 108 tackles in his career, Reuben Bain in his second year, and Mezador with 37 games under his belt.
Yeah, that experience is priceless, and that's something that you and I have talked about forever, and I'm a big believer in it. You know, the older, more experienced teams, not just necessarily older, but teams that have been in games and in big environments. And, you know, Miami brought in players from defensive linemen from Michigan State. Well, that guy, while he was at Michigan State, had to go to Michigan. He had to go to Ohio State. He had to go to big venues and play big teams, and brought another defensive lineman in from Tennessee. Well, that guy's gone to Alabama. He's gone to Georgia. He's gone to Florida. He's been in those environments that if you're not older and you may not have been in those other conferences, or you are inexperienced, you don't understand what you're walking into. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns that anybody would have of Miami walking into the Swamp or the Gators walking in to Hard Rock, is that those are very, very, very tough environments. And having guys that have been in those type of environments, even though they're not the same, it pays off because they understand how to manage the crowd and manage the situation.
I noticed this the other day in the building, and I reached back to my days when Miami had the great teams in the late 80s and the 90s, and you would walk into Michigan Stadium, Notre Dame Stadium, Michigan State, wherever Miami would go, Tallahassee, Gainesville, and there was a sense of confidence because good players were around other good players. Actually, great players were around other great players, which led to a lot of confidence wherever they went, whether it was the practice field, the game, the building. Now, we have not played a game yet, but I did notice the other day in the building the sense of confidence with the way the players were carrying themselves inside the building because they are surrounded by good players.
Yeah, it makes a difference, and a lot of that confidence goes with the strength and conditioning, which has been outstanding under Coach Cristobal. And, you know, the players who are involved, they see their numbers. They know that they improved in their testing this year and lost body fat. And they'll be the first to tell you. They can tell you all the areas that they improved. Well, that builds confidence. And the same thing goes with the conditioning aspect of it. If you are training like Miami's training in Miami, and you go up to Gainesville, then it's not going to be a big deal. You've been in the heat. You're conditioned. You spent the whole off season. You spent summer camp preparing for that 60 minutes of football. And yeah, it's going to be loud. And yeah, it's going to be hot. But it's been hot in Miami, and it's been loud in some games too. I hate to tell you, Doak Campbell gets pretty loud. We've witnessed that quite a few times. So it's going to be a great environment for a game, Joe. And at the end of the day, you know, you opened up the conversation tonight is the turnover. And I think that is a huge, huge part of it and how you have to manage it. And it's pretty simple to look at it this way. Florida State last year was 13-0 in the regular season. They were +8 in the giveaway takeaway category. Miami was -4.
Yep. I watched the Florida State game the other night. Yes, it is, no question. And I've said this before, the last 2 years, 47 turnovers in 2 years. Can't win that way. We're going to bring on Eric Palms next. But I did watch the Florida State game the other night, and damn, it's still a fumble.
I believe you.
I'm just telling you. How that was not a fumble is one of the great mysteries of this planet. How that was not a fumble. Not that I'm thinking about it, but it was a fumble. At any rate, Eric Palms will join us next right here on the Hurricane Hotline.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
And the great CEO of the Orange Bowl Committee, Eric Palms, joining us tonight. And this year, the Orange Bowl is a semifinal game. Always good to speak with Eric. Eric, good evening. How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you? Great talking to you.
Yeah, we're doing great. New era of college football. Have the playoff, expanded playoff starting this year. 12 teams. Orange Bowl ends up with the semifinal. How's it all going to work with the Orange Bowl? Next year you got the championship game, but as this playoff thing unfolds, how does it work with the Orange Bowl?
Yeah, so, you know, the original CFP agreement came together in 2014, and it was a 12-year agreement. So we're in year 11 of the 12 years. So the next 2 years are defined. This year we have a national semifinal at the Capital One Orange Bowl, and then next year, to your point, we have the quarterfinal at the Capital One Orange Bowl. So for the new model, obviously it's a multi-round. It's four rounds. For the first time, there'll be games played on campuses. So, you know, and in December, there'll be four first-round games. And the winners of that beat four conference champions that receive a bye. And those games will be played at bowl games. And those bowl games will be the Rose, the Sugar, the Fiesta, the Peach. And the winners of those games, those four teams, will advance to the two semifinals. We're one of them. We're playing on Thursday, January 9th at Hard Rock Stadium. It'll be great, prime time, 7:30. And then the winners of both the Orange and the Cotton will advance to the 2025 CFP National Championship game in Atlanta. So it's going to be different. It's going to be over a month's period of time. And I think it's going to be a lot of excitement building up from mid-December through, you know, that championship game in Atlanta.
Eric, Don Bailey here. Hey, I was just curious on organization-wise, how did you put it all together, especially when there was the double hosting, and when does it start? Like, I mean, as soon as the last Orange Bowl finishes, you guys pick it up and start right again? Or what's the process in all this? Getting it all organized.
Yeah. Don, I was going to ask you, since you're on the Orange Bowl committee, but I'll do my best.
I would say we have great leadership, Eric Palms, and he gets it all handled.
So this year we have just the semifinal, and Joe mentioned earlier that next year, you know, we have a quarterfinal on Thursday, January 1st. Wow. And then 18 days later, at Hard Rock Stadium, Miami and South Florida host the national championship game, of which we're part of that host committee. We kind of drive the organization of that. So, you know, I think your question really speaks to next year. You know, all year we work, each and every year we work towards everything that happens in Orange Bowl, including the bowl game. But in that particular year, we're wearing two hats. And we're working with the Dolphins in Hard Rock Stadium. We're working with the CVBs in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach County. We're working with all the different government liaisons to pull off college football's premier event. And so, listen, we did it. If you go back in time to the BCS era, it was a 16-year window, and they were in four-year terms. The last two four-year terms were called double hosting. We had an Orange Bowl game, and then later we had the BCS National Championship game. So, listen, we're built for this. It's been our mission since 1935 to bring economic development to the area, and we have great partners. I mean, you couldn't have a better venue than Hard Rock Stadium. The people there are second to none. The building itself is beautiful, the amenities around it. So when you're doing multiple events, the infrastructure that's built there is unparalleled. And, of course, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, they're built for major events throughout the whole calendar year, and college football's no exception.
You did, Eric, and it was critical. I mean, the college football playoff expanded. They did incorporate the bowl games. The first round is on campus, but you were able to manage to keep the Orange Bowl prominent inside that playoff system as either a quarterfinal or semifinal. I just think that's so significant for our community.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's 91 years going. You know, the history of the Orange Bowl really mirrors the history of really the city of Miami. It was founded in 1896, and, you know, in 1933, this idea started, you know, getting some traction. By 1935, the Orange Bowl was born. And, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of so many generations of great leaders that took a very, small event at the time into this national American tradition, you know. So from our standpoint, we've had great success through the years. But in the last 30 years, which is what I refer to as the modern era, you know, we were fortunate to get into the Bowl Coalition in the early 90s that graduated into the mid-90s of the Bowl Alliance, and then the 16 years of the BCS. And that ultimately led to today. It's the college football playoff. It's for 10 years, it's been in four teams in the model, and now it's going to 12 teams. But listen, the bowl games have had a prominent place, you know, throughout history. Up until, you know, 2014, every national championship game was played in a bowl game. So, you know, it has its place in America. You say Rose Bowl, you know Pasadena. You say New Orleans, a Sugar Bowl, you say New Orleans. When you say Dallas, you say Cotton. And in our marketplace, we're proud to say that, you know, when you say South Florida, you say Orange Bowl. So, you know, we were fortunate. The commissioners recognized that. It's hard to build those brands and traditions overnight. You know, the Rose Bowl's over 100 years. We're approaching 100 years. So they recognize that, you know, fans such as the University of Miami, University of Florida, Florida State, wherever, they know these destinations. It connects to previous, you know, generations going to big bowl games and big football games that conclude the college football season. And so with that being said, I would tell you that, you know, you're only as good as your next day. And so for us, our focus at the Orange Bowl Committee and for South Florida overall is to perform at the highest level. We want to make sure that we play in the best venue, which I think we do at Hard Rock Stadium. The hotels down here are second to none. We got three airports that are just tremendous for access into our region. Now you have the Bright Line that can get you from Orlando down here and vice versa. It's the preeminent place in the country to host big-time events, including college football's biggest stage.
Eric, one thing that's never been forgotten, and really I guess it's when you look at the history of the Orange Bowl, the big part of it was to generate tourism. But that's obviously for the reasons you just mentioned that happens. But also, you've never forgotten Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach as far as the community goes. You're continuing to put back and build stadiums. You're continuing to support the high schools. There's many other athletic events that are focused around the Orange Bowl. And I'm sure that the people of South Florida realize the support that the Orange Bowl gives. But aside from the game, there's a whole lot of other things that the Orange Bowl does.
It's at the heart. If you surveyed our members and you're one of them, you would be, you know, very likely to conclude, A, they recognize the history and tradition and the economic impact that comes, and that's incredibly important, but just as important as the give back to the community. And so what's emanated over the years is what we call Orange Bowl Cares. And we focus on four pillars. One is youth sports and so many different genres of youth sports. Two, education, going to the school systems and joining them and doing programs that, you know, offer opportunities for the young people growing up in the three corners of South Florida. Three is community engagement, staging events that generate proceeds that go back to charitable programming. And lastly is our legacy gift programs. And it's twofold. We go into parks. We've done six to date. We have three targeted for the future, where we partner with a city or a county and go into underserved communities and just elevate, you know, parks infrastructure, including football fields, the tracks, to, you know, press boxes, whatever is needed in that particular park. And then on a parallel track is going into the school systems and to go into libraries and renovate, you know, those old libraries that I remember growing up here in South Florida and turning them into innovative learning centers that have technology, have different types of furniture that, you know, emanates, you know, different types of interaction between teachers and students with students and students with counselors. So we're proud of that. You know, we take pride in what we do each and every year. And by the way, with the national championship game, there's another wave of community give back that's really significant. So listen, you know, it's about, for every corporation, whether it's nonprofit or for profit, you want to have success, but you also want to give back to your community, and the Orange Bowl committee leadership doesn't forget that.
Last thing for you, Eric Palms of the Orange Bowl committee with us. Previously, when you had the semifinal game, like the teams could sort of pick which bowl game they were going to, right? How do we do that now with this new system? Is it by bracket, you know, ahead of time what teams are heading your direction, or when the Final Four is decided, the teams again kind of indicate where they want to go?
Great question. You know, we're finishing that first 12-year agreement that I mentioned. So there's, you know, some things that have to be fulfilled with that agreement. Come year 13, the next agreement, I think they'll have a little more latitude to design things. But basically, the bracket will be set in early December after the conference championship games. And I do think there's going to be some sensitivities to regionality. So for the fan bases that, you know, look at their road, they're going to do the best they can, obviously, for the higher seeds. There'll be some deference because they've earned it, you know. Yeah. But the reality is, and you see this in the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments, there will be upsets. And so what's contemplated on the front end with, you know, the higher seeds may not come to pass. So, you know, I think they'll look at the bracket. They'll see, obviously, the first-round games and where those campuses, you know, will be that host it. But they'll see at the same time the four conference champions that they earn a bye, where those campuses are located, where the fan bases, you know, connect, you know, favorably to. And they'll try to create that in the quarterfinals with an eye towards the semis as well. But it's hard to do. But I think that they, you know, learned a lot in the first 10 years of the CFP. Remember, you had two semifinal games and you had two locations, you know, and the cycle would be Rose and Sugar were matched together. The Orange and Cotton were matched together, and the Fiesta and Peach were matched together. So they could see it and they could see how to shape it. They also have to pay attention to the other side of the games, particularly for the higher seeds, because you don't want to put them in an environment where the lower seed is closer to home and there's some advantages there. So, you know, the team selection committee knows all this. They're given direction by the CFP management committee, which is the conference commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director. And they follow that as they form it. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting because four teams is probably a little bit more manageable to do when you finish the conference championship games on a Saturday night and you're announcing it the next day around noon. Here they're going to have to fill out a 12-team bracket. So there's going to be a lot of modeling, I would imagine. They have great leadership at the CFP, and I would imagine that they'll do the best they can to, you know, speak to the teams, particularly the higher seeds, and make it as favorable to the fans as possible.
All right. Always good to talk to you. Will we see you in Gainesville?
I won't be there. I will tell you, Joe, when I grew up in Miami and I went to the University of Florida, the first game I ever saw in 1983 was Miami was at Florida. And so it was special then. I know it's going to be amazing on August 31st. So I'll be watching, and it'll be a great game.
You'll be watching and listening?
That's right. For sure.
You know, he's a big fan, Joe. He's a big fan.
Well, my two buddies are on the other end of this line, so I will do that for sure.
All right. Stop by and see us at Hard Rock. Thanks for being with us. Always a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Take care, guys.
All right, that's Eric Palms. He's done a great job with the Orange Bowl. I could talk about him for about an hour, but we're up against the break. So when we come back, Bruce Feldman, who has a big story coming out tomorrow in The Athletic on the University of Miami and their college football playoff chances, Bruce Feldman is going to join us next right here on the Hurricane Hotline.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.